This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Garrett Graves. He is the chairman of the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority for the state, and he recently called the Army Corps of Engineers a disaster. We'll talk with Garrett Graves about where we are now as we approach the 8th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Also on the show today, Chancellor Jim Lorenz of Southern University on the challenges on the Bluff with budgets and declining enrollment. And we'll visit, along with Chancellor Lorenz, Michelle Hill. She is the Director of Admissions and Recruitment at Southern University. Jim Lorenz, Michelle Hill, and Garrett Graves today on the show. We now pause for the news from WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and our guest in studio is Garrett Graves. He is the chairman of the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority for the state of Louisiana. He was with us last year and gave us an update on his work, and here we are coming up on 8 years since Hurricane Katrina slammed the state. And what Garrett does is survey the situation, and right now, 8 years is a long time in some cases. Some might say not so long in others. Doesn't seem like it's been that long, but how are we looking? Almost a decade since Katrina powered through Louisiana and changed our world forever.
Well, the good news is in the greater New Orleans area. You look at parishes like Plaquemines Parish, St. Bernard, Jefferson, Orleans, and portions of St. Charles Parish. We have the best protection we've ever had in those areas. And that's a really impressive. The Corps of Engineers did work very, very quickly, expedited time frames as compared to anything they've ever done before. And they set records for largest design build contract. They have a flood wall that has 50 times more steel than the Eiffel Tower protecting St. Bernard Parish. Really just some impressive work. Projects went from the back of napkins to completed in nearly 6 years. So good news for the greater New Orleans area. You have areas outside of New Orleans. You have areas like the North Shore, St. John Parish. You have areas like Terrebonne and Lafourche and over in southwest Louisiana that remain vulnerable. And oftentimes what we see in disasters is that folks respond to the last disaster instead of preparing for the next one. And so good news, again, in the New Orleans area, but we still have a good bit of work to do in some of the other communities.
297-5633 for Garrett Graves, 877-217-5757 outside Baton Rouge to talk with a man who is the governor's coastal authority about the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, the organization that Garrett is the leader of. Now, he has been with the general administration since its onset, and the governor took over in interesting times. It wasn't that long after Katrina when he became governor in 2008, less than 3 years. So in the 5 years since then, what kind of improvements have you witnessed as far as how we're addressing this situation?
Well, one of the great things is that I think Hurricane Katrina really caused a fundamental shift in folks' mindsets and understanding the relationship between coastal land loss and hurricane vulnerability. It also made folks understand that in some cases you have to make sacrifices in order to develop or in order to have a more resilient community, a more sustainable community, more protection. And so a few examples of that are that when Governor Jindal came in, one of the first things we did is we totally realigned state government. We took components of about four or five different state agencies and in effect, built a new office that was solely focused upon the coast, hurricane protection, coast restoration. And instead of having these siloed efforts all around in different state agencies, we consolidated it all into one. We set up a board of directors for the coast of Louisiana. Actually, that was done under Governor Blanco. A board of directors was set up for the coast. And then this implementation office, by taking these four or five agencies and integrating them into one office, We have increased output on coastal projects by about 500% while increasing staff by about 12. We have built more miles of levees. We have restored more acres of wetlands than any other time in our state's history. And the governor and the legislature have recognized that progress and put unprecedented funding levels into this program to where we're literally carrying out projects now at levels that are exponential to the numbers we saw just 5-6 years ago.
Well, prior to joining forces with the state, Garrett served as an advisor to U.S. Senator John Breaux, Congressman Billy Tozan, as well as the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's been involved in this endeavor for some time. Now, recently you were quoted as saying that the Corps of Engineers is responsible for much of the erosion on the coast, about 1,900 square miles, largely, you say, because of Corps actions or inaction. Why so?
You know, Jim, it's really interesting. The Corps of Engineers, without a doubt, years ago was viewed as just the world-class experts in terms of water resources. Since that time, the Corps has become, I think, somewhat stagnant. They're very inflexible. And I want to be clear that these delays and challenges within the Corps of Engineers, they're not necessarily 100% their fault. I think there's some culpability within Congress because of the way they're required to operate. But you have the Corps of Engineers as the agency that's supposed to be regulating coastal wetlands. If you go build a house or shopping center, mm-hmm. some type of development project, you're going to have to mitigate for any wetlands impacts that you cause. The Corps of Engineers, by maintaining the river the way they do, by having the levees on the river, dredging all the sediment and putting all that sediment out into the deep waters of the Gulf of Mexico, they are causing wetlands loss in coastal Louisiana, because what used to happen before the levees were there is that the sediment every spring flood would come out and it would actually deposit in our wetlands areas. And Louisiana was growing approximately 0.75 square miles a year prior to the Corps' construction of these levees. After these levees were built, our state went from growing 0.75 square miles a year to losing almost immediately about 28 square miles a year. And over the last 80 years, we've lost about 1,900 square miles. And that's gone anywhere from a range of losing perhaps 11 square miles a year on the low end. And then in 2005, we actually lost around 200 square miles as a result of the additional impacts from the hurricanes. So in effect, you have the agency that is regulating wetlands that is causing the largest loss of wetlands in the nation and doing absolutely nothing to mitigate for those actions.
Here's a quote from you that was produced this month: an outdated and inefficient project process, budget cuts, lack of accountability, rogue attorneys, and the rise of the bureaucratic morass has related the once exemplary Corps to an entity incapable of progress. Those are strong words.
They really are. And I don't take statements like that lightly. Jim, we lost 1,800 people just as a result of Hurricane Katrina just 8 years ago, or nearly 8 years ago. A lot of times the Corps of Engineers looks at things like a crisis when it's imminent, whenever it is, mm-hmm. you know, the hurricanes in the Gulf. At that point, it's too late. It's too late to protect communities when a hurricane's in the Gulf of Mexico. The current Corps of Engineers process from conception of a project to completion of a project is about 40 years. Over the next 40 years, we're going to have more hurricanes. We're going to have intense hurricanes. We don't have 40 years to go in and protect Lafourche Parish, protect the North Shore, St. Tammany and Tangipahoa, St. John and St. Charles. Again, Lafourche and Terrebonne in southwest Louisiana. We don't have that kind of time. So the imminence is now, the crisis is now. And with this core process that takes 40 years, we're not on a trajectory to protect the people that deserve protection. So what we're in effect doing is we're setting up a scenario to repeat the devastation from Hurricane Katrina all over again.
And there have been reports of late that many of the levees around the nation, including some in this area, they're not up to par 8 years after Katrina. Why could that happen? How could that happen after all the gnashing of teeth and consternation that occurred and the promise that better times were ahead after 2005?
I believe that you're sort of in this circular process here. It's kind of a do loop where Congress looks at the Corps of Engineers for the most part, like a bureaucracy, the agency that studies things to death with little action. There's a quote that a lot of people use to describe the Corps of Engineers. They may be slow, but at least they're expensive. And while that's funny, it also, you know, translates into the loss of our coast and the loss of lives potentially from storms. So I think that the Corps looks at it like Congress looks at it like a bad investment, yet they're not doing anything to improve the efficiency of the agency. And so if you look at the real dollars invested in the Corps of Engineers or appropriated to the Corps of Engineers over the last few decades, you see a significant drop off. And again, I think it's because people look at it like a bad investment, but they're not doing anything to fix it. But I want to give the Corps credit where credit is due. And that's an example is the Hurricane Katrina work. That was done under a fundamentally different approach where Congress came in and said, all right, here's the money. And you have virtually blanket authorization to go in and repair the hurricane protection system in the greater New Orleans area and to revise the system to incorporate lessons learned from Hurricane Katrina. And they did it. And they met some impressive statistics in carrying out that work. But it's a fundamentally different approach than is normally taken with water resource projects by the Corps of Engineers.
Garrett Graves, the chairman of the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, and we will talk with him about what's happening this year regarding the money that has been expended and the projects that are ongoing. But as we approach year number 8 after Katrina, if that kind of a hurricane were to come this way again, is the state certain that things are better, that we would be ready? Or do we not know?
You know, Jim, I think if you look at Hurricane Isaac as an example, the last hurricane that we had, there's no doubt in my mind that the investments that were made in the greater New Orleans area saved hundreds of millions of dollars in damages, particularly in areas like St. Bernard, like New Orleans East, and some of the other Lake Pontchartrain communities on the South Shore. So as one example, that investment we made mm-hmm. saved hundreds of millions of dollars in damages. It saved dozens of lives. And you know, that just shows you the payoff of making proactive investments. For example, the Congressional Budget Office did an analysis that determined for every $1 you invest in pre-disaster type mitigation projects, mm-hmm. protection projects, you get $3 in savings. There was a study done by FEMA that says it's $4. General Russell Allray, uh-huh. the hero from Hurricane Katrina, says that he thinks it's in excess of $10. I asked him for the study, and he said he made it up. But he said, "But I think it's right," and I do too in Louisiana. I really do. Just looking at some of the examples that we've witnessed, so Greater New Orleans area performed really well. That protection system performed really well. But it also Hurricane Isaac also identified some of the vulnerable communities. We had flooding worse than we've ever seen before in some of the communities on the North Shore and Slidell, and again St. Tammany area, St. John. You had areas that were huge neighborhoods that were underwater, like around Laplace. You had some communities like Braithwaite and Plaquemines Parish that were devastated, and of course Lafitte down in Jefferson Parish were flooded. And you know what's amazing is when you look at the history of Braithwaite, Lafitte, Laplace, and some of these North Shore communities, they've been around for 300 years. Obviously, Hurricane Isaac being a relatively weak storm, it was Category 1, for it to cause this type of damage and devastation we saw with a low caliber storm like that, it really goes to show you the relationship between all this land loss we've experienced over the last 300 years and how much more vulnerable some of these communities are. Surely those communities wouldn't mm-hmm. exist if a Category 1 hurricane would have wiped them out over the 300-year history.
Of that 300 years, though, much of it has been in the last, you say 80 years, but probably more like the last 20 or 30 years, right?
The drop off or the loss of land, it's really not a straight line. You know, of course, hurricanes and other events cause that erosion rate to increase significantly. But certainly, 2005 was a banner year in regard to the 200 square miles of land loss. But
200 what's, of the 1900.
200 and 1900 in yeah. 2005. So that's a pretty big hit. But you know what's important is that as a result of the investment that the governor and the legislature have put into the coastal program, we actually have been able to put a pretty big dent in reversing that annual land loss and had us, prior to the oil spill, on a trajectory to actually turn things around.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Inkstershow@WRKF.org works via email. Garrett Graves will return in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. Garrett Graves, the chair of the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, is with us for a while longer, and then we'll join forces with Jim Lorenz, the chancellor at Southern University. We're talking about what's happened to our state and the reaction to the reports over the last 8 years that the Army Corps of Engineers was negligent. Do you think the Army Corps was the biggest culprit as far as Katrina?
I really do. I think when you look at some of the incredible failures that occurred, man-made failures that occurred, that led up to the disaster we witnessed from Katrina, I just think that those were inexcusable lapses in engineering and other factors. And in fact, Congress directed the Corps of Engineers to reevaluate the entire hurricane protection system in all of South Louisiana for probably about 5 years before Katrina, recognizing that things like subsidence and land loss changed the conditions, as well as updated modeling information and science that made our understanding of coastal Louisiana more accurate and the vulnerabilities, understanding the vulnerabilities better. So I think that the Corps of Engineers actually refused largely to do that analysis, despite the direction from Congress. So for those three reasons, again, I think the engineering failures, some of the lapses in regarding the construction, and their refusal to take a fresh look at the protection system when directed by Congress, I think that the Corps absolutely failed. And I think it's going to be one of the biggest black eyes in that agency's history.
297-5633. Brent on Sherwood. Brent, you're on the air with Garrett Graves. Hi, Brent.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is, as you build the walls higher down there around New Orleans, and the force is coming from the south-north, all it's doing is pushing the water down until it finds a lower height than the wall that you built. So until you build a wall 50 miles long or 100 miles long, that excess water's got to have some place to run off.
All right. Garrett, what do you say?
Yeah, Brent, you're exactly right. And as a matter of fact, I think that some of the lessons learned from Katrina is that we've got to stop taking this compartmentalized approach, or perhaps parish by parish approach, to coastal restoration and hurricane protection. It's great if you have New Orleans protected to a very high standard, but if all that's going to do is divert water and flood Jefferson Parish, you haven't really achieved anything. So what we did after Katrina is, instead of having levee districts lead all of the flood protection work in South Louisiana, we set up a new state agency to take a broader view of things, to recognize that you have to take a comprehensive approach and integrate coast restoration and hurricane protection, flood control. So that's exactly what we're doing. So you're right that when you build walls like we did across the Lake Bourne in St. Bernard Parish, Orleans Parish, that the water does have to have somewhere to go. Even when it stacks up on a wall 10 feet there, if you think about the size of the Gulf of Mexico, that is going to cause a fraction of an inch rise in the Gulf of Mexico water. And so it really is the right approach to take. Now, what we're looking at now is building a wall, a barrier, in effect, across the Regulies and Chef Pass to block the entrance of Lake Pontchartrain wind storms approach. And there have been concerns raised that that would flood the state of Mississippi. And while some people in Louisiana may think that's okay, it's not. So we're actually working very closely with Mississippi to figure out how we can build a project that will both protect the folks on the Lake Pontchartrain communities and Lake Maurepas communities, but at the same time not just do it to the detriment of Mississippi. So you're exactly right, and we are taking a much broader approach to make sure that we don't protect one community just to flood another.
Now, after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill almost 3 years ago, Garrett was appointed by the president to the Gulf Coast Ecosystem Restoration Task Force, and he was elected to serve as vice chair to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on long-term recovery and resiliency efforts. What's going on? What's the latest regarding BP and the litigation and courtroom appearances that have ensued over the last few years?
Well, that's a very hot topic right now, and causing an awful lot of people to get little sleep, I think, as a result of all the work
including
me. So what's going on there is that the first phase of the trial, which includes everything that led up to the explosion of the Deepwater Horizon rig, starts on Monday. And this is probably the most important phase of the trial because it's the phase that largely will determine if BP was grossly negligent or not. If they are determined to be grossly negligent, the amount of fines that they would pay, punitive damages they would pay, would actually quadruple. It would go from a range of $3 to $5 billion to a range of $17 to $21 billion. And so a huge jump in numbers, and under federal law, those penalties will come to the five Gulf states. So there's a little bit of scrambling right now by BP and the collective governments to see if an 11th hour settlement can be reached. But if not, I'll tell you, I think the Department of Justice and the state of Louisiana are absolutely ready to go to trial. I think we view this like going into a gunfight, and BP's got a gummy worm.
Will you be testifying?
For the first phase of the trial, no, because the state of Louisiana didn't have anything to do, obviously, with the explosion of the rig. But in subsequent phases, I do expect that you'll have a number of folks from Louisiana that will be required to testify.
And we're talking about a substantial amount of money, and that just goes to show how much money is out there in the oil and gas industry. $17 to $21 billion, that would shut down most companies.
Yeah, if I recall, BP's profits last year were in excess of $20 billion.
Profits?
Yeah.
That's not revenues. That's net profit.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So, and that's after this terrible calamity.
Yeah. The company is obviously a very big company. They were the largest leaseholder in the Gulf of Mexico. I believe they're maybe second now. They sold some of those assets to pay some of the claims before them, address some of the liabilities, but certainly a very profitable company that likely has a bright future. In fact, some stock analysts believe that if they settle this, that their stock jump will largely consume the payments or settlement that they make for the case.
Question from Miriam. She asks, why is the new construction and coastal zones still being allowed to be built on the ground? Why not require it to be elevated above Katrina surge levels?
Well, what happens on heights like that, the heights of buildings and homes, is that is based upon a FEMA standard. It's called base flood elevation. And I think that FEMA made a grave error after Hurricane Katrina when they came into the New Orleans area and basically told people for the first few years after Katrina that they could build back to the same standard as before Katrina, which obviously wasn't sufficient. And they largely did the same thing in other areas of South Louisiana. They're now taking a new look and trying to design or understand what the new standards are in order to ensure that folks are built high enough, their homes and businesses are built high enough. So they are doing revisions right now. In some cases, I think that they make sense. In other cases, I think that FEMA is missing the mark and actually requiring folks to elevate, in some cases, just to extraordinary ranges that don't appear to recognize levees and some of the other work that we've done.
A few more minutes with Garrett Graves. He is the lead coastal person in the General Administration, 297-5633. This year, you've got, what, $700 million that will be expended? What is the focus of this?
We just released our draft annual plan for coastal projects in Louisiana. In fact, we had our second public meeting last night in New Orleans, had hundreds of folks there. What this is we developed a new master plan for the coast last year, integrating everything from the economic activity and jobs that have to occur in coast Louisiana with the seafood, the maritime, the port systems, the energy activities, the food, everything in South Louisiana that's important to folks. We integrate it with hurricane protection, coastal restoration, and flood control projects. And so the first increment of that $50 billion, 50-year plan is the one we're working on right now. It's about 114 projects. It's about $700 million. And we will be moving forward in everything from restoring barrier islands to building new levees, building higher levees, building pump stations, just to make South Louisiana more resilient. We just have this dream that the day after a hurricane, people are going to be going back to work, going to be in their homes with their families, and hurricanes are just going to be another rainy day.
Democrats and Republicans squabble on Capitol Hill, including our own delegation, although there are few Democrats in Congress right now from Louisiana. But on this issue, this is one where it seems that people of all political stripes can join forces and have done so. That's one good thing about this is that you have people like Senator Vitter and Senator Landrieu who don't agree on much of anything, but usually they're in concert on this issue.
They usually are, and that's one of the great things about this job is this isn't a partisan issue. Everybody believes in that South Louisiana is worth saving, that our communities are worth protecting, and you know it's interesting because just testified in the U.S. Senate a few weeks ago. On this, and a lot of folks were up there saying that, well, look, we can't afford to do this. And it's really amazing because it's very easy to help folks understand that you actually can't afford to not do it. And a perfect example of that is the 2005 hurricanes, where you had nearly $150 billion in federal funds for disaster relief and programs, recovery programs, to respond to those devastating hurricanes. And so to all of that was deficit spending. We're going to be paying for it for generations. And for folks to sit there and say we can't afford to do this, yet come in after a disaster and spend exponentially more dollars helping a community recover is just a backwards approach. So I think that there is bipartisan support. There is a greater understanding of the need to make more investments, but most importantly, to develop a more efficient Corps of Engineers process to get these projects carried out quickly.
When you testified on Capitol Hill a few weeks ago, were there any senators who gave you a hard time?
No. I think that folks really do understand. I think that people appreciate that what Louisiana's experienced over the last several years with Hurricanes Katrina, Rita, Gustav, Ike, and Isaac, that we really are ground zero and probably the best laboratory to understand core processes and the best reforms that could be implemented to make this system work, including giving the state and parishes in some cases more of a leadership role like you build as you do when you build federal highways around the country.
Well, Garrett Graves, you got a big job, and we wish you well, and look forward to following you this year and beyond, and let's talk again soon.
Will do.
Always
thanks
good to visit with you.
You
Take
too.
Care. And we're joined now by President, Chancellor of the Southern University campus, Jim Lorenz, the man who runs the show at the Bluff. And Jim Lorenz is here to talk with us about what's happening at Southern University, one of the great institutions in Louisiana and in the world. Good morning to you, Chancellor Lorenz.
Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. We visited with you, and you've gotten a baptism by fire, and no doubt that much of that is related to the budget situation. How severe is it right now?
You know, it's very difficult for us, as it is with all the institutions in the state. But, you know, we're fighting through it. We're getting ready to prepare for this next fiscal year. We know that we'll have to probably absorb some additional budget reductions. We survived this year with basically through some additional appropriations, use of one-time funds. So we still have a challenge ahead of us as we start preparing for this next fiscal year. We're forming budget committees. We'll start meeting next week. going over our existing budget, going over our projected expenditures, what we can come to expect in revenue. So we realize that what's critical for us is to start generating revenues through increased enrollment, through any type of entrepreneurial activities that will bring additional revenues in. We're trying to increase our online degree offerings. And, you know, those are things that I think we're doing that's not unusual or you know, different from other institutions. We, on the Baton Rouge campus, we're reorganizing our academic units, cutting our colleges and schools down to six, reducing the number of chairs and deans that we have. So we're doing it in a way that, that hopefully we become more efficient at the same time, increase the quality of academic offerings that we're providing to our students.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. We're visiting with Chancellor Jim Lorenz of Southern University, and in a few moments we'll also be joined by the Director of Admissions and Recruitment, Michelle Hill. Right now, what is the enrollment at Southern University?
Yeah, for this semester, we have a little over 6,400 students, which is an anticipated reduction from the fall semester of about 300 students. You know, we're looking at reversing that trend for the fall semester. We've actually brought in a new position of Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Success, reorganizing our Office of Recruiting, Admissions, Financial Aid, Advisement, and realize that it's not only a matter of recruiting but also retention. So we're making sure that we're providing everything that we have to do on our end, improving our customer service, improving our responsiveness to prospective students, moving out to those areas within the state and in bordering states to attract students. One of the things that we're always facing now is the increased cost of tuition and students' ability to pay.
How much has the tuition increased?
You know, we've done 10% increases over the past couple of years. You know, our for in-state students now, you know, we're talking about right at $3,000 a semester, and then out-of-state students pay, you know, an additional $3,000, and that's, you know, that's not including room and board. So
yeah, so if you're an out-of-state student, you're talking $12,000 a year if you're a full-time
exactly.
student.
Exactly. And so it's difficult. You know, most of our students are receiving financial aid, whether through Pell Grants, through student loans, through parent loans. And we've been working with them, you know, this past semester, working with students that come in and say, you know, I'm short a few hundred, I'm short 2,000. And we've been providing as much assistance to them as we can to make sure that they're able to stay in school.
That 6,400 number that you gave as far as students enrolled on campus this semester, that's down from a high a few years ago of what, over 10,000?
Yeah, several years ago, but you know, you have to remember, Jim, that you know, at that time we were an open admissions institution. It's you know, it was a time when you know there you know the state of Louisiana did not have the number of community colleges that it did. So there have been a number of changes in higher education since then. I think we're Southern University can slowly increase that over the next several years. You know, hopefully getting into the 7,500 to 8,000 student range.
297-5633, your number. Chancellor Jim Lorenz will be joined by Michelle Hill, Director of Admissions at Southern University, and we'll return after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, and outside the area, 877-217-5757. Jim Lorenz, the Chancellor of Southern University, joined now by Michelle Hill, Director of Admissions and Recruitment for Southern University, with 6,400 students. And Michelle Hill, you're at the point of this endeavor to increase enrollment. What's your sales pitch when students come and they're making their decision about whether to go to Southern or somewhere else?
Well, Southern University is still in the business of nurturing students who otherwise would not have an opportunity to go to college. We are still the only system of HBCUs, and so we pride ourselves on our ability to take students who are less than prepared, according to some standards, and turn them into potential business leaders, community leaders, political leaders, by going through a process of nurturing them as academically as possible, but also giving them the tools to be leaders and make contributions to the university. We're still a good sell. We're local, and we're also very affordable for the quality of the degree that the student receives upon graduating from the university.
Well, Jim Lorenz, a moment ago you noted the addition of so many community colleges, including one in your backyard, and Baton Rouge Community College is a force in this city with enrollment that now exceeds the number of students at Southern. How much has this impacted you?
Well, it's been a significant impact. If, you know, when we talked earlier about at one time when we had 10,000 students, Southern University was also offering associate degrees at that time. So we no longer can offer an associate degree that's offered at BRCC, I think. You know, Chancellor Milo there is an excellent leader. I've had several discussions with her, and with our two-year campus in Shreveport, we have to do a more efficient job of students that are going to be transitioning from a two-year campus to a four-year campus. And we started a program on the Baton Rouge campus with our sister institution in Shreveport, where students that don't meet our admissions criteria can be admitted to our Shreveport campus but still remain on the campus in Baton Rouge, take those courses offered by Shreveport campus, take some courses here, and it affords them a greater opportunity to transition to a four-year degree program. You know, and the other thing that when we talk about selling Southern University, I'm here, but I wasn't able to come into the studio because we had a career fair on yesterday. We have several corporate entities on campus. I stepped out of a meeting with them just a few minutes ago. But we are, you know, we have a great placement rate for students. Our engineering and business programs, our nursing programs, our computer science programs. You know, we have individuals here on this campus now this morning and yesterday from Boeing Corporation, from Walmart, from Raytheon, from Texas Instruments. And these are all individuals that come to us on a regular basis because they understand the quality of students that we are producing. So when I go out and tell students that Southern University is a good opportunity for them, it's because, you know, we prepare them for careers, and our students are in demand across the country.
This financial situation that we have mentioned, it's severe on every campus in Louisiana, and we saw yesterday where President Jenkins at LSU has said that it's affecting LSU significantly, and of course it has affected you, and this has included financial exigency. So how is that developing as far as getting your fiscal house in order?
Well, you know, the financial exigency ended in June of last year. You know, so starting July of 2012, we're out of it. It was, you know, we had to do that to make some necessary cuts, both in terms of furloughs and in terms of faculty and staff reductions. So we've done that. We, you know, we believe that we are as lean as we can get right now. If we're faced with these additional budget cuts, we'll have to probably take some more creative means of addressing them. Students are seeing increased class sizes. You know, they're seeing greater teaching load from faculty. We're reducing our administrative costs. We're trying to become more efficient through the use of electronic processing methods. The system, the Southern University system itself, is embarking on a transformation plan to create efficiencies by combining some operations at a system level instead of our five campuses. So there are a number of things that are in place that we have to do to prepare for this new fiscal reality. But like I said, the bottom line is getting students in too, and you know, that's where Ms. Hill and her staff and that Office of Student Success will come in. Terms of convincing students that you know, we offer a quality education for them.
Michelle, do students really do they know about all these financial woes that are going on, or is this something that's in the background and not really a factor with them?
I think students are aware of it, but they're not concerned about it as much as what takes place in the classroom and their experience. If a student experience is positive, where they're still able to interact with student programs and student life and not be impacted by what takes place in the classroom, students don't necessarily understand some of the things that are going on because their world is there in the classroom and on the campus. And I can truly say that students have not been impacted in the sense that you would think that some of the larger things would have on them. The classrooms are still excellent places for the students to engage with their instructors, and that's the important part of it. So academically, and this overall student experience, to my extent, has been not impacted as much as you would think that it would, considering some of the severity of what we're going through. I think Dr. Lorenz and his administration have done a great job to ensure that academically the programs are sound and the students' experience is still a positive experience for them, to ensure that the student is retained, but also have a comfort in knowing that upon receiving that degree, it is a viable degree that will allow them to go out into the world and secure jobs that will sustain them.
All right. Now, Chancellor Lorenz, you have stated that the last 2 years have included tuition hikes of 10%. There's, of course, conjecture again that the state budget is teetering. So are you facing the prospect of perhaps another tuition hike?
Yes, we are. And unfortunately, it's something that that we have to do if we're looking at balancing a budget, looking at the students that are coming in. I don't think there's any way to avoid it. I think we're still an affordable institution, but it's we're getting to the point where the burden is on tuition, so that drives us to increase enrollment, so that we increase our tuition. Our revenues in that respect. But it's as we compare with other institutions around the country, we're still affordable. But it's just that we've in Louisiana. We've enjoyed probably 5-6 years ago a very low tuition rate, and folks have gotten accustomed to that. But every year, 10% increase is a significant increase. Especially for the student population that we're serving.
What kind of debt do most students face when they leave campus if they're getting financial aid, loans, and that sort of thing? They probably leave campus not only with a degree, but also they're saddled with a significant amount of bills to pay.
Oh, yes, they are. And we're trying to educate them on the fiscal realities of what they're facing and how critical and important it is for them to maintain a full academic load, to do whatever they can to graduate within a reasonable period of time, whether that's 4 years or 5 years or so, because as you do that, the longer you stay around, the harder it's going to be to repay those loans. Also, what you run the risk of now because of changes in the federal financial aid structure is that you wind up not being eligible. You wind up maxing out even in terms of your ability to secure the financial aid through a loan or a grant. So we have to educate our students, and that becomes the retention process. That becomes the advisement process. Letting them know that you need to concentrate on getting your hours in, carrying a full load, maybe something more than 12 hours. You need to do 15. You need to do 18 hours. Make sure that you're not dropping courses, because the longer you take, the greater burden, financial burden, you're going to have when you finish.
What's the mood of the faculty right now?
I'm pleased with the faculty. We've asked a lot of them, and we make sure that we communicate with the faculty on a regular basis. We have open lines of communications with our faculty senate. They are, there's some that are frustrated, but also some that realize that we're moving in the right direction, and I think that's the majority of them. But I can't say enough about their commitment in terms of not only delivering what we've asked them to do in the classroom, but all of those other activities that go along. Most people think that faculty come in, teach their course, and they leave. Well, there's a lot more to it now. We're asking them to document learning outcomes, to measure what students are learning, and to be able to put that, and for us to be able to document it and report it. So there's a lot going on. There are a lot of extra activities going on. They're trying to continue doing research, teaching larger courses, teaching more courses. So it's, you know, I think it's good. I think that I'm pleased with the effort that they have made. I am pleased with the level of support that we have from our faculty.
297-5633. There is still an opportunity if you wish to talk to Chancellor Jim Lorenz and Michelle Hill, Director of Admissions at Southern University. Johnny wants to know how many or what percentage of students at Southern, what is the percentage of students from the state of Louisiana?
Michelle, you may have a better handle on that, but I think we're probably at about 85%, maybe. Does that sound about
right?
Yes,
I would concur that our the largest percentage of our students are in-state students.
And you've made some efforts to attract students from neighboring states, particularly Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi. What are you doing along those lines?
Last year, the administration incorporated a new out-of-state tuition waiver, which is called the Bordering States Out-of-State Waiver, and it primarily focuses on Texas, Mississippi, and Arkansas to exempt the tuition for incoming freshman students who have a GPA of a 2.7 in their high school curriculum with a composite ACT score of a 20. This is targeting primarily to students who are in these neighboring states because, as you know, there's normally a five-mile radius between someone being out of state and in-state, mm-hmm. but that doesn't play into consideration when you're talking about qualifying for in-state tuition. So as a means to attract these students who are in our neighboring states, the administration incorporated this tuition fee waiver that a student is eligible simply based upon their academic performance. They're able to maintain the out-of-state waiver if they maintain the 2.7 cumulative GPA in addition to a full-time schedule. So this has assisted us with attracting students from the state, the neighboring states. However, it has been something that we were doing before. Now we're just making it more attractive to another population of students.
And Jim, let me add that especially in the Texas area, you know, we have a large number of Louisiana expatriates, if you will, large number of Southern University graduates. They're pushing students to come to Southern University. They're pushing their children to come to Southern University. So in the Houston, the Dallas area, there's a significant amount of interest in Southern from that population. So I think this will help us. You know, we also want to, you know, let folks know that we're having a college night on the Bluff coming up. So Michelle may want to share that with you, but we're inviting students from all over to come to the campus on, is it the 26th?
Tuesday, February 26th from
next
6
week.
P.m. Yeah, next that's
week.
Next
yes.
week from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the F.G. Clark Activity Center. This is a open forum for students who are graduating in May, their families, and all family members can attend and have an opportunity to speak with all the academic departments to find out about the admissions process, programs, degrees, scholarships. We normally give away scholarships to students who are admittable to the university just by attending and completing an application packet, in addition to other scholarships that the chancellor offers. And these scholarships are offered on the spot. So students can come, get academic information, and more importantly, that piece of the financial aid that we're talking about, the students will have an opportunity to speak with financial aid counselors and complete whatever outstanding issues in preparation for the fall.
That's 6 to 8 p.m. next Tuesday, the 26th F.G. Clark Activity Center, and it's for high school.
High school graduates. Juniors and seniors, yes.
Looking for a place to go to college, and Southern University is a fine university. How important is it as a historically black college and university? How important is it to preserve, in your view, Chancellor Lorenz?
Well, I think it's important for us because, you know, I mean, we have a history. We're about to celebrate 100 years here just on the Baton Rouge campus next year. What we've done from our history is educate students that at one time had no access to that. But I think more importantly now that we're more than just an historically black university, but we're a university that's open to everyone that offers a quality education to anyone. So it's, you know, we're not here just as an HBCU, but we're here as an institution offering quality education to any student that's willing to come. So our, you know, we're no longer our competition is no longer other HBCUs. Our competition is every college university in this state and in this region. So Southern University, because of what it's done, because of what it's accomplished, and because of what we currently are doing, that, you know, that we are a viable institution that will remain here. And we'll continue to improve that. So, yes, it's our history. It's our tradition. We'll maintain that. We relish that and cherish that, but at the same time, we realize that we're first and foremost to an institution of higher education offering quality education to any student.
What kind of collaborative efforts are you having with LSU right now?
You know, we've always worked with LSU in terms of faculty exchanges, dual appointments. Former Chancellor Martin and I spoke often. Dr. Jenkins and I have talked on occasions. I think between the three institutions here, between BRCC, LSU, and Southern, that there are still opportunities for us to work with in terms of degree programs that they may offer that we don't have that our students participate in.
When will the Jaguars play at Tiger Stadium?
Good question. I don't know if that would happen anytime.
Well, if LSU can play McNeese and Northwestern and all these other Louisiana schools.
Yeah, we'd love to go.
Tigers,
we'd love to go.
Can you imagine the spectacle that would be?
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it? We'd love to go over there. We think we have a great athletic program, both in football, baseball, and basketball. So, I'd like to see it.
All right. Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you.
Lorenz and Michelle Hill. Good to visit with you. Good luck to you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim.
My pleasure. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.